to Pop a la Carte number 80. This week we have like a crap load of Disney Plus news because they released a lot of information on that at that call they had. Tatiana has some things to say about the Magician's finale, although I guess so does Angela, but you know, she doesn't really watch the show, so she doesn't care.
But Angela was the one who made me aware of those things that we could say, so.
K-Drama Corner is back. We haven't done it in a while, actually, so
yeah.
That's kind of cool. Game of Thrones is also back, and there are things to say. There are lots of things to say.
Yeah.
And then I've got an interview that I did at the TCAs earlier this year with the creators behind There She Goes, a new series that just dropped on BritBox. It's been in the UK for a while, but it just dropped on BritBox. Anyway, I am Valerie.
I'm Tatiana.
And I'm Angela.
All right, so Disney Plus, basically, mostly it was like confirming all the things that we already knew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And opening a new door with its price of $6.99, that suddenly I'm like, forget everything I ever said about Disney Plus. It is the only streaming service I know.
Well, it's not even just that. It's $6.99, or if you pay for a year in advance, you get basically 2 months free.
Yep.
Right? Because it's $69.99.
Exactly.
So, and which actually gives me something else we could talk about in the news section that, everybody's convinced DC Universe really is failing now, because now they want you to pay more for that than the entire Disney, Lucasfilm, Marvel, and Fox catalog.
Are you serious?
And then they just cut one of their shows. But so yeah, DC Universe probably not doing so great. But hey, Disney's getting all my money. Bad or good? I don't know. Can't decide.
The story is that I should hurry up and watch all of Young Justice on my brother's login at DC Universe before it goes away.
That's correct.
Before it's gone.
Yes, you should. Yes, you should.
Like, that's a possibility. Because they're claiming Swamp Thing was cut just
creative differences.
But the rumor is it's really because DC Universe is failing. Because it's not really worth it.
I feel like that would make more, like, you know, monetarily speaking, would make more sense than, like, creative differences. Like, I'm sure that's happened, like, we know that's happened before, like, Hello, American Gods. But it just kind of, you know, seems unlikely that James Wan's team was like, so I just have such strong feelings about Swamp Thing that I cannot allow it to continue in down another direction, especially when Titans, I don't know how that didn't have creative differences, so.
Yeah,
you think someone on board there would have been like, this is not good, actually. So.
Should have said it.
Yes.
But, which reminds me, we're completely going off topic now, but there's also the news that Ian Glenn is going to play, which then everybody's pissed off about, because they're like, wait a minute, why does DC Universe get to do Batman, and none of the DC TV shows can even, like, mention his name, really, right?
I guess because they're the ones that got DC in their name. But yeah.
Anyway. Back to Disney Plus, which actually sounds like it's going to be good.
Yes.
Although I do have to give them crap for, what the fuck is WandaVision?
It's the ship name for Wanda and Vision!
I saw somebody using that name before I realized what it was, and I was like, oh, so we have a name. I was like, that's just their portmanteau, and they're like, oh no, that's what they're calling the show?
Yeah.
What? I'm sorry, but that's terrible.
The show's coming a little too late. They needed to have done a show making us care about them before we were supposed to care about them in Infinity War.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
It probably would have.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like the WandaVision show is one that sounds the kind of like eh-ist, but at the same time, yeah. I would be glad to have Wanda's character develop more. And it's the only show that's really got a woman in it, live action wise, so I guess
so she's not getting her own show, because I know they announced, like, when they first announced they were doing this, they were gonna, like, they said there were Loki ones and Scarlet Witch ones.
Yeah.
So this is the Scarlet Witch
this
one.
This is the Scarlet Witch one, yes.
Okay, that makes me cranky. Like, she can't do it on her own, she needs a toaster.
Well, I think they said from the beginning it was going to be Scarlet Witch, but Paul Bettany would be in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we knew he was in it. I just don't think we were given the impression it was going to be equal billing.
Right.
But I guess at least her name is first.
It does make it sound like you're buying goggles, though, that make you see the world the way that Wanda sees it.
I don't know. It's funny because I could have cared less about either character before Infinity War, and I don't really care. But at the same time, I still, like, by the end, I think I felt enough for, like, everybody that I did feel it when she's having to try and kill him.
Right.
So, like, that hurt, even though I wasn't really that invested in them.
Yeah.
By that point, I was invested in, like, everybody so much and just them winning that I was like, no! So, I guess the Marcus McFeely and the Russo brothers did their job in that respect, but yes, it would have been nice to have gotten this. Do we think it's going to... Matt is joking that it's going to be because, you know, obviously they're dead, so this is during that time period before Infinity War, and it's basically Wanda and Vision travel the world. And so it's just, you know, it's like a travel show. It's
I didn't realize that was a joke, because that is literally what I thought it was going to be. Not that it was like a travel show, but I thought it was going to be, this is Wanda and Vision before the Infinity War. This is what they were doing in the meantime. You know? That's what I expected it to be.
We should do, like, a Taika Waititi-style mockumentary of them doing, like, a travel show.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, like, a food show. I would watch that.
That would be funny.
I would so watch that. Mm-hmm. It would be hilarious, and I would actually probably...
Facebook, run. Definitely, I feel like it lied to me, because people were getting all excited about, like, a new show with Peggy Carter. But really, it's
an animated show that's AUs of Marvel, like their what if comic book series. So it's like every arc is going to be like a different what if. And so the first arc will be Peggy as Captain America, but it's not a Peggy show. She's just the first arc.
Yeah. So I think that's really cool. I was just, and if I would have learned about that in a different context, I would have been really much more excited.
I have a feeling a lot of people have that wrong. And they're going to be shocked when they get more information on it. Because I think everybody was like, wait, what? We're getting Peggy Carter back? And it's like, no, 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 no. You might get Hayley Atwell doing the character. And they may draw her to look like Peggy Carter as we know her. I mean, and they probably will. But we're not getting Agent Carter back.
It would raise the question, why didn't they do it? She would have made more sense. Just saying.
Yeah.
Although Steve is perfect, but, you know, it would have made more sense to go with somebody who was already there. But that's neither here nor there.
It's true. I mean, to be honest, maybe she was not stupid enough to take it.
That's true. She's like, no, you're not injecting me with whatever that is.
She had no. She was like, I'm perfect the way I am. I don't need this crap.
Whatever. Yeah.
Because she is perfect the way she is. So, she doesn't need
it. I'm definitely tempted. I'm super tempted for Disney Plus as well.
Yeah.
I really want to see, I really want to see if they'll actually, because they've said they'll use some of the voice characters from the MCU and then some new, and I'm like, come on, Chris Evans, you can do like 5 minutes of recording for one episode of What If. That's all you need.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I think that I could, like, I would happily, like, get, like, a Disney Plus Hulu combo, because I think they're doing a combo, and then just cancel Netflix.
Yeah.
Until Disney Plus raises its prices to meet Netflix's, and then I'll go back to Netflix.
Yeah. And the problem is that Netflix is getting so many exclusive K-dramas now.
Yeah.
That now I'm like, oh no, like, you found the one thing that would make me, especially with Drama Fever gone. Like, I'm not going to pay for 3 K-drama streaming services.
Right.
But with Drama Fever gone, I'm like, oh, if you're going to keep getting K-dramas, I want to watch.
If other sites didn't make them so accessible, I would agree with you. But as long as they are accessible elsewhere, I will continue. I mean, I would still be like, oh, I'm sad I can't support you on Netflix, but I will say goodbye.
We are going to have extra money because we're canceling Prime, which we actually have to go do now.
Oh, I guess that makes sense because you're not going to be shipping yourself things to Germany.
I mean, we can actually use Amazon, and Amazon will come here, so that's, like, useful for things that we want that we can't get,
but,
like, it's not going to come in 2 days, so there's no point in doing that, and there's nothing on Prime that, like, really Alexa can do on that about canceling Prime, because there's shows on it she wants to watch.
We didn't get any new information about it, right?
I think they did kind of mention that it's going to go along with the comic situation where he's kind of gender, like gender queer.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, I think that's interesting. I think that's exciting.
That is kind of, that is very exciting. It's kind of annoying, what if, is really, like, the what-if version is the version where he is, like, a cis dude. Based on, like, the comics.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is his show.
Yeah, his own show.
So, this is basically acknowledging that this isn't an episode of What If. This is
Loki's show. Yeah, the Loki show. I thought you were saying that the What If Loki is like the Loki we have in the movies already. He is a What If Loki, but no. Okay, I understand that. So yes, we will be getting a Loki show, and then of course the Falcon and Winter Soldier show, buddy cop comedy.
Which we don't know anything about it except that it's confirmed and we have a logo.
Yeah.
That's it, right? Yeah. Mm. Which is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just happy now know what's really happening. But I still think it's funny that, yeah, every single one of these shows is about people who are supposed to be dead right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, because they've been really weird about, like, not wanting to confirm anything.
Yeah. But all the shows where we confirm that people are coming back, because no one believes their shows of, like, yeah, everybody knows they're coming back, but this is the, hey, we're definitely bringing them back, because they're all getting their own.
I guess you could say that most of them, like with WandaVision, could all be taking place, like, before Infinity War. That's what they could say.
Yeah, but it's unlikely.
Exactly. But
I can see maybe one of them happening before Infinity War, but all three? That's just weird.
The pre-Infinity War show that I want, that they have not announced yet, it's like a Shuri show. Like, show me, like, a teenage Shuri who, like, takes over Wakandan technology and invents all this stuff. Like, I would totally watch that.
I just want to watch more. I don't actually care what it's about. I just want to watch more Shuri.
Yeah, it's true. It could be whatever Shuri. More Shuri, anyhow.
All Shuri, all the time. Actually, the ladies of Wakanda in general, because, you know, as much as I like Black Panther, the ladies are actually more interesting.
They are. No, and everybody knows it's true. Like, what was Nakia? Let's see that mission that she was on before Black Panther started. Let's do any number of amazing things.
Yeah. Did you guys watch... this was actually from Celebration and not the Disney Plus thing. So it was like... it was just all Disney all the time. Did you guys watch the trailer for The Mandalorian or any of the stuff? I didn't.
I haven't watched the Mandalorian trailer yet, no.
I did watch the Star Wars Episode 9, Rise of the Skywalker trailer.
That's true. We have to talk about that.
How we feeling?
I thought the trailer was nice. I think that...
The trailer was good.
Yeah. I think title's a little silly, but... you know, either it means we are, in fact, retconning Rey's parentage, or it means, like, the Jedi Order is changing their name to the Skywalker Order, because that just sounds better. Or alternately, I guess, Luke could literally rise from the dead and, you know, just be, like, a 3D full-size hologram for the rest of his days. I don't know.
Did you see that, like, in 2012, before we knew the title for The Force Awakens, that... some guy tweeted, episode 7 will be called The Rise of Skywalker and Palpatine isn't dead. And so it's like, that's creepy, you were right, just 2 years, or 2 movies wrong.
That's hilarious, wow. Oh yeah, I forgot.
Like, wow, how did you get that?
I forgot about Palpatine not being dead. That's kind of annoying to me. I have a friend who loves Palpatine, so he's really excited, but I'm like, I feel like we're done with that.
I would be okay of one scene of, like, Palpy's cranky ghost, like, haunting that Death Star that they found, and maybe, like, taking a piss out of Kylo or something.
Yeah. Or
that's all I want. I don't want.
If, like, Palpatine had possessed a slug and that slug became Snoke, that would, like, explain Snoke. So maybe he's.
Somebody came up with some theory of, like, what it actually is, and I was like, I feel like you're just trying to explain away a lot of, like, people's bad behavior and stuff. Right. And, because basically the whole idea is, so Darth Plagueis was the one who trained Palpatine, who then Palpatine murdered. And so this theory is that somehow Darth Plagueis knew that this was coming and had figured out how to transfer his essence to his apprentice. So he moved into Palpatine and then tried to move into, like, he wanted to be in Anakin, but that didn't work out. And then he wanted to be in Luke, but that didn't work out. So then his essence just was out there. And somehow Snoke found it. I don't know why. And then when Snoke died, he knew he was going to die too. And that's why he let Kylo kill him. And now Kylo is actually possessed. and that he'll, so, like, his bad deeds now aren't really him. And I'm like, yeah, but he still, like, committed genocide several times before he could have been possessed. So he's still a bad person anyway. Just don't give me a redemption arc, please. That's the only thing I ask for. Just let him be a bad guy.
I think, like, the title doesn't bother me because I immediately decided it would be a new Force Order that we're just going to be called Skywalkers. Because if it's the alternative, then I'm just like done. I'm not interested in, like, I'm not interested in more Skywalkers.
I also, yeah, I don't think they would give that away in the title, you know? I don't think they'd be like, well, this title is this, it's going to be this because of...
Yeah. I like the idea that it's not the new Jedi Order. It's a new order that's not, like, the Force users who want to do it their way, or the way that Luke did it in the books that are now non-canonical.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be acceptable. That would be acceptable.
But we'll see. But the trailer looked really cool because they did a good job at that, so then I was excited.
They do usually. Like, whoever Disney gets to cut their trailers, they are really usually pretty excellent trailers most of the time.
Like, returning to me saying they need to have a trailer editing Oscar. It doesn't have to be one of the ones they air at the award ceremony, but, like, they should do it.
I felt bad, though, because it's like, so the trailer was cool, and, you know, I will go see 9, because I want to see how the story is going to act, but, like, my friends were all so excited, and I'm like, I really wish I could be excited again for Star Wars. It's burnt too many times now.
I'm sorry.
I'm happy that at least, like, our new baby trio is back together.
Reminds me, like, this, my friend was like, when J.J. Abrams said, like, oh, well, I just want you to know that they will be together, like, they'll be on an adventure, like, everyone will be together. And then, like, my friend was like, yeah, he's just here to make everyone happy and collect his check. He doesn't actually.
But now I don't trust, because, like, we ended with our trio all happy in the originals, and then they took that away from us.
Yeah.
So, right? That's why I'm like, stop making Star Wars movies and let them just be happy forever. Like,
That is exactly Matt's complaint. That it's not so much, like, I honestly believe you wouldn't have as much of a problem with the movies if it was, like, 70 years later and everybody had already been dead anyway.
I mean, I will still go to see them, but I'm completely with him. I would be much happier with them if they just left all the other characters.
Yeah, you know. I am very happy to hear Bob Iger say that they're going to get Star Wars a break for a little while. Thank God. How long is a little while, though? Like, 2 years? Psych!
I mean, it's officially in the big movies, too, because they've got, like, a ton of TV series coming out. So.
Well, they have two confirmed. The Mandalorian is one of the first things we'll get.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the one that's, like, predates Rogue One, I think?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Well, there's another Clone Wars that's coming out.
Oh, I don't even know anymore.
There was a new trailer for more Clone Wars.
Oh. So. Of course there was.
Even though I haven't watched the Mandalorian trailer yet, I am looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Pedro Pascal.
Yeah.
I'm just mad because, like, the most famous Mandalorian that we know, well, don't look at, but, like, the other most famous Mandalorian that we know in Star Wars is a female character. But God forbid she get her own series.
Of course
about
not.
Mandalore. So that I just feel like, I think Mandalorian looks really good, and I will want to watch it, but I can't without being a little mad. So.
Speaking of Star Wars and just, like, celebration in general, it does sound like at least a lot, because I have a lot of friends who went, and you could tell that, you know, it was very much the kind of thing as, see, this is the real Star Wars fans, don't listen to the incels and trolls online.
Right.
Because, like, when Kelly Marie Tran came out, people, like, she got the longest standing ovation and people were chanting her name. And it was like, thank you, Star Wars fans, for being awesome. Yeah. So it just goes to show, just the loudest voices aren't always the ones that represent everybody. At least on the internet. So, yeah. I feel like I had more to say about Disney, but then, you know, wait to record for so long, I've forgotten half of what I want to say. Oh, well, that's fine. Mostly I just am excited for Marvel.
I mean, I think it looks good overall. I'm definitely think that they, like, it's the bright side of having, like, a bunch of money to burn, right? They can actually put effort into, like, putting a lot of content for a very little price. Until, you know, it gets really popular, then they can jack the prices up, and then we're all screwed. But that's all right. For now, it's great.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be nice and, you know, let us have at least a year before they jack it up, like, $5 to be the same price as Netflix.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alright, so what were your feels about The Magician's finale? Which I keep meaning to the way, but, like, it's a season finale, not a series finale, right?
Right, season finale. Okay.
Yeah, I still feel like I might as well wait until it's over.
Yeah, that's true. So, The Magicians ended its season with Quentin sacrificing himself in order to stop the monster gods from, like, destroying the world, as well as stop the head of the library from turning it into, like, a totalitarian regime over magic, as well as to save Alice and Penny in that moment. So, he died. He went to the library, heaven, where the other Penny was there and was like, hey, you know, let's talk about this closing chapter of your life before you move on into the underworld. And Quentin's like, I feel upset because I'm like, you know, that I struggled with depression and I used to be suicidal. So I'm like, did I just kill myself or did I actually make a heroic choice? And then Penny was like, well, let's look at what's happening. Everything is good now, for now. All your friends are alive. They're all singing this fucking song for you, to honor you. So, like, I think that you probably made a heroic decision. This is not, and then Quentin's like, thanks, bro. And then he went off into the underworld. And this is, like, the first time ever on The Magicians that someone has died and, like, they're gonna stay dead. Because, like, we learned that Jason Ralph is leaving the show, as they talked before the season started, about how they would have him leave the show. Because usually people die, and then they are, like, a passenger in the library, like this Penny is, or they just come back to life immediately, or they're possessed by a monster god, and then they get restored at the end of the season. Or, or a goddess makes some kind of blood sacrifice in order to make Julia a goddess as well, and then a magical surgery turns her into a human again. Or Josh becomes a fish, and then he dies, but then Margot looks at him with the eye of true love, and now he comes back, and now he's a human again, etc. So this is the first time that someone has died for real. Yeah. And so when I watched it, I was like, well, this is really sad. And I cried and I was surprised because I don't care about Quentin at all. I've never liked him. Although he has improved as a character as the season's gone. But I was like, well, this is like I feel like this is like a nice ending. You know, like he was the chosen one. He literally saved the world 300 times. And now he can go to his, you know, he can go like George Washington under his own branch and fig tree, into his eternal rest. But then, you know, the downside, the issues of it, are what Angela brought up when she was talking about it, despite not watching the show. So if you would like to discuss that, Angela. But they are totally valid, even just based on the issue, you know, on the kind of character that he is. They're totally valid.
Yeah, so I read the first two books, and I hated them, and I hated Quentin more than I've like hated any character in a very long time. The episode where they basically, like, they had a sort of what-if episode, alternate universe, last season, I guess, where they implied, like, Quentin and Elliot lived a whole lifetime together.
Yes.
And then that was that, and they, like, never went back to it, and then a whole season later, they went back to that episode and, like, made Elliot not decided to be with Quentin in this current timeline, like, his greatest regret of his whole life. Mm-hmm. His whole very terrible life. And that's, like, super-duper romantic, and I paid attention to that because that would be, like, really long-game writing, and I'm very interested by, like, writing being that strong and having, like, such a long-game writing. And so it's very, it'd be one thing to, like, have a romance and then have it end tragically with one of them dying, like they've kind of done with Quentin and Alice. But it's a very weird thing to, like, start the possibility of something that nobody expected realistically to happen canonically, knowing that at the end of the season you're just going to throw it all out.
Right.
Like, and that's a really strange choice to make because nobody made them do the thing that they did earlier in the season. And it's just, it does make it very, I mean, yes, like, this is a show where not everybody's going to be happy and people are going to die, but, like, it's hard not to make it seem like it's falling into the kill your gays trope again.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like, oh, it looks like they're making him a canon bi character. Never mind, he's dead.
like, it's a little... that he isn't the one that you have to kill. I mean, you do, because the actor wants to leave, but then it's like, why did you make the choices that you did leading up to that?
Mm-hmm.
And then, especially in, like, the penultimate episode, they had him give this little speech about, like, why he cared so much about Fillory and magic and what it meant. And I'm sitting here, and I'm like, they're like, at a certain point, our viewers aren't going to trust us anymore. If, like, we keep bringing people back in ridiculous, increasingly ridiculous ways.
Mm-hmm.
But... why does it have to be realistic? Like, you have this whole speech in the penultimate episode about, like, getting to believe in magic and how much meaning that can have for people. Like, that could be your theme of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, why... I just don't necessarily buy that the only way to make things realistic is to kill people. Although, I guess I didn't realize how many times people have almost died and then brought back.
Yeah.
So there is that.
Yeah, so there's that. I mean, although Penny is, like, Penny is the actor and the character is still there, but he's also not, like, Penny's not getting to be out there living the life.
Right, but there is his doppelganger, who is living the life. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, I don't agree with the argument that, oh, the only way to make it realistic is to kill people. Like, that's just a whatever argument, right? Like, okay, sure. But... I feel like if the actor is going to go away, then maybe the only believable way would be to kill him unless you replace him, right? Like, be like, oh, he shifted into a different person, and now he's just trapped in this other form, and he can't get out, you know? It's still Quentin, he's trapped in another form, so you could have done that.
Yeah.
So, sometimes you don't, like, there are certain characters, like, where as a writer, you would feel like it's not true to that character to, like, just replace the actor. You know, like, the actor's side of the character, mm-hmm. replacing it would feel cheap. I don't want to write for that other actor. I want to write for my actor. So if not, I'm just going to kill him. You know, so, like, I understand from a writing perspective why they did what they did with him, but from a character, like, arc, like, a narrative, or not from a character arc narrative, from, like, the fandom perspective, like, what that character means for people, the fact that they made him a canon bi character, and so is Elliot. So it's not like they didn't just kill, like, they didn't kill the only bi character. Elliot is bi, too. But they did give them the possibility of a canon homosexual relationship in the show, which they don't currently have, and then take it away by killing Quentin. And also, even before that, I thought it was weird. I thought it was weirder when they went back to Quentin and Alice out of nowhere. Because, like, Quentin and Alice had been dead for, like, two seasons or more. And I now understand that they did that so that they could give them a nice closure. Because before that, it was just Quentin being like, you suck, Alice, I hate you, you disturb my life, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. Oh, wait, I forgive you, Alice. Yay! I loved you once, and I can love you again, and now I will die. So that we are, like, in a nice place when I die. So I was like, okay, I understand, I guess, why you did that. But, like you said, it doesn't make sense to bring back the possibility of Quentin and Elliot, and then just drop it. Plus, more importantly, but more, like, obviously to me in the episode, it was weird because he's bringing up the possibility of it having been suicide, which I didn't even, I was like, it clearly was not suicide, so I don't know why you had to bring that up, but to, like, harp on the fact that he previously struggled with suicide, and then have his death be, like, kind of suicide, even though it's not, and then to the point that you have to put, like, the little suicide hotline at the end of the episode. Like, well, maybe you don't do that then. If you're gonna feel like you have to put the suicide warning at the end of the episode, maybe just have him die in the battle. Like, he's battling the, you know, and then he happens to die, but he takes down the person too. If you're gonna do it, if you have to kill him. So I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely felt like it was because they felt they had to hang a lampshade on it because they were worried that people would be criticizing them for doing this with a suicide of character. But then, yeah, they should have just done it. Your way.
Yeah, just don't have him, maybe sort of, but not really kill himself. So I was like, okay, this is odd. I was like, thank you for putting the hotline, but then why? Why did you choose this life? But yeah, I do, I don't know, I guess we'll see. We'll have to see what they do in the future without Quentin, but I totally understand why people are upset about it.
From an anti-fan of the books, I'm actually really excited about this. Possibility of a magician story going forward without Quentin. Because I hate, like, I don't even have words for how much I hated that character.
Yeah.
Like,
Why? He said he's like the main character, yeah?
Yes. He's just so effing entitled.
Yeah.
And tiny. And like, honestly, he was obsessed with these books. Like a Narnia light, basically, or like a Narnia type style book. And then they get to go in that real world, and he wants to be the hero, and he wants to be the chosen one. But then he doesn't get to have it all, and he's really mad about it, and it doesn't work out well for him. And like, I mean, maybe this happened in the third book. I was so disgusted after the second one that I didn't read it again, because I was waiting for him to be taught a lesson that, like, that's not realistic, and you don't just, the world doesn't just owe you all these things.
Right.
But it never did.
But yeah, I guess
he had to live. He had to live a normal life without magic, like briefly. But then he got to go back and have more magic again. And meanwhile, the other big thing is that the series has done a lot more for its female characters than the book did. So you contrast that with like the shitty lot that the female, like legitimately shitty lot that the female characters keep getting, and Quentin won't stop whining about him not getting to be like a true hero, like in his storybooks or whatever. And I'm just like, I'm gonna throw you across the room,
right?
But it doesn't seem like, even from the inception of the TV series, Quentin was ever quite that bad.
No, and also like I feel like, in the show, Quentin was taught that lesson. Like, this isn't just your story. And they even recently had that episode where, I can't remember, like, someone was like, well, this is just Quentin's story, so, like, it doesn't matter what the rest of them are doing. And then Penny was like, oh, let me tell you what the rest of them are doing. This is everybody's story, you know? So, they made a point of, like, actually teaching Quentin that lesson in the show. So, and then, you know, I guess that was because they were like, well, we're not even going to have you that long, so. So, yeah. Overall, I still think Magicians is a great show, but the choices they made in the finale were iffy based on the previous trajectory of Quentin's life.
I mean, I just feel like it's one thing to like have your hero go out heroically and everything, but it's another thing to make everybody think that new stories are starting and then be like, nope, never mind.
Yeah.
Like, but then what do I know? Because, like, I don't actually watch this. I was just, it, like, suddenly popped up, like, after 4 or 5. There were, like, a ton of articles about it, and I read it, and I was like, this is really interesting. Maybe I'll pay attention. And I'm like, never mind. I'm glad I'm just watching K-dramas. Which certainly make a lot of crappy decisions, but that is why I usually wait till they're done. And so at least I know what I'm getting into.
Sometimes that's the safer route, right?
Yep. Speaking of K-dramas, you are getting into one where you know where, you know what's done.
Yes. It's going to be just fluffy and light and not really challenging, which is what I need right now. Like, I'm barely able to watch an episode a day right now. But Romance is a Bonus Book, which wrapped recently. And what I really like, it's not plot-wise reinventing the wheel, but it kind of is, because what I like is that it's the main character is 37 years old and she's divorced, and her husband like divorced her and just like left her with like literally nothing, and so she had a successful career. It sounds like a very successful career. Like, she was a marketer, and she I guess wrote a couple really famous commercials, or like famous, but just like ones that people know really well.
Right.
But then, you know, she took years off after she had a baby, and she hasn't been in the workforce for like 7+ years, and she cannot get hired anywhere else. And despite having all of this experience, and then she's finally able to get a job where she like lies and says that she only has a high school degree, because there's this job at this publishing company that like, it's like a contract position, and it's basically for somebody fresh out of high school or whatever. Just like a gopher kind of position, and she applies for it because she's desperate. But she has to, like, she's constantly told she's overeducated but underexperienced for all these jobs. So she, like, lies about being a successful marketer. And so it, especially in the first couple episodes, it really delves into how we do punish women for having families. And how we expect them to have it all. And it delves into how women who get to the top just by imitating patriarchy, it's not really feminism, because there's a couple female characters that she encounters that really hate her for, like, trying to come back, because they were, like, they had to work too hard to be able to have what they have, or they had to sacrifice certain things that she hadn't had to sacrifice. So I'm like, but she sacrifices queer. Everybody sacrificed something. Like, why? Like, should she hate you if you decide to get married and have kids because she sacrificed her career to get married and have kids? Like, this is stupid. But that's the point, is that, like, they're just imitating the patriarchal system of, like, stepping on people to get to the top.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, we don't see a lot of that. There's still not a lot of focus on that in K-dramas. There's, like, a little bit. But I hope they talk about it more. But mostly it's just light and fluffy, and the male lead just stares besottedly at her, which is, you know, all I really want. I want the character development to be her character development.
Right.
Because when I first started getting into K-dramas, you've got a lot more development for the female characters. A lot of times the male characters were a bit more one-dimensional, but it's because they were sort of female-centered wish fulfillment. And so the women, they had to have these complex lives, and show ultimately was about them and their lives, and they had families and friends and whatever. That started to fall by the wayside recently, and the men get more to do, even if the show starts off with the women, so... I like that.
Yes. In Romance of the Bones book, the character development, the masculine character development, comes more from the second male lead, whom,
yeah.
Mr. Dog. He has his story. He has a story that is, like, outside of the romance, that involves the male lead, too, but it's really, like, his own personal story that I think is, it doesn't detract from the female lead story. Or from Hae-rin, who I love. The second female lead. She's also...
I know, I love her too.
Got her own little, I guess, you know, getting over first love story.
I think by maybe not having anything be too dramatic or there being that strong of a plot has let them delve into the lives of so many more of their characters.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get so much more of your tertiary characters as well. Like, a lot of times your tertiary characters will get a story that, like, starts. Like, they're just introduced... as they orbit the lead.
Right.
And then we see something happen to them that's peripheral to the lead, whereas, mm-hmm. like, this one, when they introduced them, they gave them their own little backstories.
Yeah.
Like, that happened before, and I thought that was really interesting, and I've not seen that very often at all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I totally forgot, like, G-Yule, so, you know, the other little interns that come in with Danny, the lead? So G-Yule is, like, the one that just, like, got the job because she was, like, tired of her mom yelling at her to get married. And she doesn't really care about the job at all, so she definitely gets a strong arc about, you know, learning to care about her job. And the dude that's there with her, his only arc is to love her. So, again, that's great.
That's fun.
Yeah, exactly. I liked that show a lot. It was very, very cute. I started Her Private Life. So that's four episodes
in. Which we talked about on this podcast.
Yes.
When I first... announced it.
Yes, we did. We did talk about it, and you were sad that Kim Jae-won, is that his name? Kim, maybe not. His name is something else. It doesn't matter what his name
Wook?
Is. Yes, Kim Jae-wook. That's his name. I was like, Jae-won is the name of the other guy. So yes, Kim Jae-wook is playing kind of an asshole, but it's interesting because it seems like after the first week, they realized that he was, like, too much of an asshole. Like, it was literally... Like, at the end of the second episode, my friend Amber and I were like, there is literally no way we will ever ship this. He is ridiculous. and then, like, suddenly in episode three, he was, like, a totally different person. Suddenly. He was, like, a considerate and kind and, like, self-sacrificing dude who's, like, just looking out for her. And I was like, and of course with the tortured backstory that explains why he's a little standoffish. And I was like, something, clearly, someone told them after the two episodes, please stop this. This is not correct. And now
he's having a couple really bad days at the beginning.
Everybody has a bad day.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, so, of course, I love Park Min-young, and I think that she's wonderful. And she's doing, like, a really fun job playing sort of, like, the Nuna fangirl, right? So her story, I think we've talked about it a little bit, but she's the curator at an art museum, and then, like, by day. And then by night, she's the fan site manager for some dude from a fake band called White Ocean. And she sees him as, like, her child, a child that she sponsors. And so she goes out of her way to, like, you know, hype him up. And she's actually was, like, his first fan, or he calls her his first fan. But he doesn't know what she looks like or anything because she always covers her face with a mask because she doesn't want people to know that she's, like, a 33-year-old art curator. So it's, like, they, like, interconnected all the stories. So it's, like, she and her boss, who is the male lead, that was an asshole to her until she almost killed him with coffee, and now he's just, like, totally devoted to to making sure she's happy at all times. So all you have to do when your boss is an asshole is to put coffee in his drink when he's actually allergic to coffee, and then after he almost dies, he will just do what you want. So it's like they're working together to get the idol to, like, put his art in the museum for, like, an exhibition. So she meets him as her part of her day job, but she's trying to keep her identity hidden as part of her night job. And then there's a scandal with her and the idol because she was seen leaving his house for the business, you know, for business reasons. But everyone thinks they're dating now because she left his house. And so then they have to cover that up. So it's like a lot of, like, idol culture. Like, you know, like, they're not allowed to date. And the fangirls, how insane fangirls can get. So a lot of sassing, the sassing situation, which is, like, very specific to Korea for some reason. I don't know why they have that. But yeah, so it's, like, her dealing with sassing fans, which are, like, the over-obsessive fans who stalk the idols and... But also, at the same time, are the ones that are the most financially supportive of idols and K-pop. So, like, the companies don't do enough to stop them because they're like, well, we don't want them to stop giving us their money. So we have to kind of let them be crazy until they almost kill someone. And then we have to, like, please don't almost kill people. So, yeah, I think it's really interesting. One, like, there's one, my biggest issue with it is also, like, the thing I like most about it. So it's, like, weird. So her and her best friend are both, like, huge fangirls, right? So they do everything together in terms of fangirling. But the best friend's always jealous because she's married and has a kid, so she can't, and also, like, runs her own, like, coffee shop. So she, like, can't go out and do all the fangirling that her friend can. But the male lead, when he first meets them, it's because they're trying to get a room in a hotel that the idol stayed at. So when the friend goes up to ask him, and of course the male lead's the one who has the room, she wants to switch rooms with him. And she's like, it's because there's someone that I like, but I just can't see them very often. And so I need this room to be able to see them. And first he's like, no. But then he sees her with Park Min Young, the female lead, and he thinks that they're lesbians. And he's like, oh my God, I can't believe that I refused to let them have my room so that they could be together. So then he gives them a room because he thinks they're lesbians. And then all the time he sees them and he thinks that they're together. So he's like, oh man, I have to make sure that, like, they're protected from society. Who's going to try to hurt them? Like, I wish it was true. I wish they were. That would make the show so much better. But at the same time, I enjoy that it is. And then, like, they have to pretend, at some point they have to pretend to be a couple to cover the scandal with the idol, right? Be like, oh no, they're together, not the idol. So he's like, are you sure that your friend's gonna be okay with this? Like, the friend's the one taking the photos for them? And he's like, does she, like, like watching you? Like, I don't understand. Like, I don't want to be doing this in front of her. And of course, they don't understand what he's talking about. So Park Min-young's like, yeah, she gets even more excited than I do. I don't know why. I've told her that it makes me uncomfortable. And he's like, well, you have to stand up for yourself. Like, she's married and she won't let you get married. Like, this is wrong. And I was like, okay. But yeah, point is that it would be so much better if it was true, but...
I will say I'd heard that about that drama, and, like, I do wish it was real. But what I'm loving this trend, though, in K-dramas, like, we had Matrimonial Chaos, where they all but acknowledged that, like, the lead sister was a lesbian. And then they have an actual lesbian couple in Romance's Bonus Book that, like, the male lead is totally cool about. And now you have, in this one, not only the male lead being totally cool with a lesbian couple, but, like, berating himself for heteronormative assumptions. And I'm like, even if they're actually true, and I'm like, I'm liking this. Like, they're talking about and acknowledging things a lot more suddenly.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, by this time next year, they'll actually have relationships that are relevant to the story in the show.
Yeah.
But yes.
Baby steps?
Yes. They are baby steps.
Netflix, maybe. I mean, if Netflix is starting to produce some K-dramas, we should all, like, write to Netflix and be like, stop it.
Yep.
They can do it.
So, is next up Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I think we get to let Angela go now.
All right, say goodbye, Angela.
Oh my god, I've talked enough about a show I don't actually watch. For one podcast. Okay,
well, thank you for joining.
So,
yes, thank you.
Bye!
Bye!
I don't know how I felt about that episode, but I realized I felt uncomfortable a lot, but I think I was supposed to be, right?
It depends. What made you feel uncomfortable?
Well, just because, like, there's so many, like, half of the reunions are uncomfortable, and I think that's why then I felt it felt uncomfortable because of
that. Oh, I can see that, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, like, the Bran and John one was really sweet until, like, 2 seconds later, it's like, let's just watch Bran John realize that Bran's a weirdo now. And...
Yeah, it's become a meme, apparently, to put Bran just sitting in his...
Yes!
In the background of pictures. Like, I saw one of the sailor who kissed the nurse.
Oh my god!
Randomly in the background.
That's amazing. Yeah, no, I was like, laughing at all, but there was so many memes for Bran after that night. I was retweeting all of them. But yeah, I will say the Arya and Jon reunion was a little bit, like, awkward and, like, maybe it was not supposed to be that way. Just like the way that they had like they show up, or you know, Arya shows up in the garden or whatever, and then it's like, yeah, basically like, what's up? Not much. What's up with you? Well, I've just been murdering people. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And then they hug, and I was like, I feel like they could have hugged first and then had the dialogue, because it made it a little awkward. But yeah,
I think I'd agree with that one. I think that was the most awkward one, because we all expected it to be so happy, and then it was like, it was a little stilted, and I guess it makes sense because it's been so long and they've both changed, especially her, obviously, so much.
Mm-hmm.
That it is kind of a where do we fit together,
yeah,
kind of moment.
Yeah, it was just
plus, like apparently no one's happy with any of the decisions John is making.
Nope.
Nobody likes Daenerys. Everybody wants things changed. It's like,
yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I, like, obviously, I'm always on Team Sansa, so I'm like, yeah, I totally agree with Sansa.
Yeah.
What are they gonna eat? But I do feel like it was a bit, like, there was, like, some weird, like, undercurrent of, like, racism from the North. I just feel like the extras, like, randomly looking at Missandei and Grey Worm, like, I'm like, and I was like, okay,
yeah,
that's weird. But I do think that it's kind of hard to know, like, obviously, Daenerys, we want Daenerys' help because we want the dragons, and we want to stop, yeah, the White Walkers. So it's great that she's doing that. But on the other hand, she is kind of, like, only agreeing to help if people make her their queen, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, how right is she, and how not right is she? Like, where do we, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And that's why the moment when, you know, Sam asks, you know, if John thinks Daenerys will step aside once she finds out the truth.
Right.
It's a good moment, because it's like, that's a question I've been asking myself for a while.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I'm not sure what I think is going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, too. It's yeah, because, like, John never wanted power, and he keeps getting it, even though he doesn't want it. But, like, isn't that also, that's, like, the kind of ruler you want, supposedly? In fictional narratives, the best rulers are the ones who didn't want the power.
Yes.
So that makes me wonder, you know, will there actually be, like, a showdown between Daenerys and Jon? And I'm surprised, but not surprised. Like, when she burned the Tarleys, I was like, well, that's fucked up. Or that's,
yeah,
bad. But then I didn't think they would actually make it a thing. And now they are making,
yeah,
it a thing. So I'm like, okay, that is interesting. Like, she does sometimes go a little bit, you know, a little bit harsh, a little strong with the power.
Yeah. Well, and I wondered when the fact that they had her make that confession to Sam first, before you then have Sam tell John about his parentage, I was like, is this also just setting up, like, an issue between them where Daenerys is going to be like, well, he's making it up because he doesn't support me?
Mm.
Like, she can question.
Right.
You know.
Like, she doesn't believe it because, like, he's just saying that because I killed his family.
Yeah. Which then I was like, oh god, please don't let that mean we have to have another scene like when Bran told Sansa about how he remembers her, you know, marriage and rape.
Oh god,
and
that was
like, hey Daenerys, I saw yours too.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
I was like, please don't go there.
Yeah, let's not.
Although, make it something else that she sees, like when he died, when Drogo died or something.
Right.
Don't make it that specific, but, because I assume at some point he has to prove that he can, like, he's really having these visions. He really sees all these things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But have you seen the theory that, because, you know, everybody's making jokes about the fact, the way Drogon was watching the two of them?
Oh, yeah. Yes!
So weird.
Yes!
Have you seen the theory that Bran was warding into Drogon at the time?
No, I had not. That's a super weird theory. What?
I know. Because their thing is, you know, that this could be part of the reason that Bran is so, like, we need to tell him about his parentage right now, because he knows.
Right.
It's like, but then again, everybody knows that they're, like, everybody can see that they've fallen in love.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, even Sansa was like, did you bend the knee because you think it's right, or to save the North, or because you just love her? It's like,
Yeah. And he can't answer. He doesn't on screen, at least.
Yep. He does not. I guess he's like, both? Can it be both? But no.
Both?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, because it's just like how he easily told Cersei no when he... Yeah. When he did not need to. When he could have lied. I feel like if he didn't feel in his heart like, yes, Daenerys should be my queen, then he would have been like, I'm sorry. Can't you just save the people without doing that? We can talk about that later.
Yeah. This is not important.
Right. Yeah.
We all might die.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, it was like a little bit, it's definitely like a table setting episode, but
yeah.
I was happy. Because Sansa got to be smart. And
everybody acknowledged it.
Exactly. Everyone acknowledged her being smart. And equally as important, Arya and Gendry finally reunited. And it was finally canonically flirtatious.
Because now she's old enough that it's not creepy.
Exactly. She finally aged into the ship.
Difference.
Yeah.
There's still a pretty big age difference. Like, what is the age difference between Maisie Williams and Joe
Dempsey? Right. The actor age difference is pretty big, but the character age difference isn't that big. So it's like, it's finally okay. Although, you know, I love Joe Dempsey, but I wish they had cast someone Gendry's age to play Gendry. Yeah.
So it wasn't so creepy when everybody was talking about it. And he was like, she's like 12.
Exactly. Yeah, he's 31, and she is 22. So it's a 9-year age difference.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah. Not as bad as it was, because at least she's, you know, legal and an adult now.
Exactly.
And a little bit more mature, but still.
What is Joe Jonas's age? Okay.
Now.
I don't know how many. I think that we're supposed to just assume she's like 18 now, you know? Like, okay. We just assume, like, the number of years from the show has been on is what has passed. Even though that's not the case. But they are acting like everyone's just much older and wiser now. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know where they're going to go with Arya and Gendry. Like, it's not like they're going to, like, oh, get married and live happily ever after kind of situation. But I do hope that they both live and that, you know, I can pretend like they get married and live happily ever after.
Yeah. I'm still very much firmly in the, I'm trying not to be attached to anybody because I just can't. Because
you're so smart. You're so smart. I can't do it.
So many people are going to die. I feel like Davos is the only person that I'm like, I really don't want to see Davos die, but I think he's going to.
No!
I don't know. I just, at this point, I've basically resigned myself to everyone dying.
Wow.
So that I can be pleasantly surprised when maybe a couple of them stay.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, it's more like, this person needs to die. And if this person doesn't die by the end of it, I'm going to be mad.
Well, who is that for
well,
you?
Well, obviously Cersei. Cersei needs to die, yeah. And Euron. Euron can die, too. That was probably the worst part for me was, like, the Cersei-Euron parts. So I was like, why? Okay, that's a lie. The like, 1 minute and 50 second long How to Train Your Dragon sequence was also very unnecessary. But Cersei and Euron overall, I did not need that in my life.
Yeah, I really don't. Like, why? Why did she do it? Unless it's just we're supposed to understand from the end where, you know, he's talking about putting a baby in her and she doesn't say anything about the fact that she thinks she's already pregnant.
Right.
Is now she's not going to tell people it's Jamie's. She's going to try and say it's Euron's.
Yeah, I actually thought, I low-key thought the opposite. Although I guess it would have been clear by now. I kind of thought that she had lied to Jamie about being pregnant.
Yeah.
And then she slept with Euron so that he could get her pregnant. And she could tell like it was Jamie's. But
suppose.
I guess the opposite makes more sense, obviously. The opposite makes more sense, like, from a political perspective.
I mean, I still think either way. I thought she thinks she's pregnant, but she's not.
Oh, yeah.
She's either sick or she's, you know.
That makes sense, actually, yeah.
She's having, it's like, she could be in menopause already. She's
right.
Old enough, I think, the character, right? But, yeah, I don't know. That whole scene just, it felt weird to me. Like, why is she, you know. I guess we're supposed to assume because she needs him that she's just giving him what he wants to keep him.
Right.
Because she has no other allies, but it's just felt weird.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be weird. Just in general, like, I'm like, what does she think she's doing?
Yeah.
Like.
And I'm still having a hard time figuring out the structure, because I, like, the series started.
Mm-hmm.
With the White Walkers, with characters we didn't know and were never gonna know, really.
Yeah.
Dealing, like, from the Night's Watch, dealing with the White Walkers, so I still feel like that has to be the final battle, is against the Night King.
Yeah.
Not Cersei. But obviously we're getting, it looks like, in the next episode, the Battle of Winterfell.
Right.
So I guess now I think that it's gonna be, the next episode is the Battle of Winterfell. Almost, like, I have a feeling a lot of people are going to die in the next episode.
Yeah.
Or we don't know what happened to them.
Here's a question for you.
And they're going to fall back to King's Landing, and then it's going to be a fight on both sides.
Because yeah.
I don't think Cersei's just going to be like, oh shit, they're coming. It's going to be like, well, I'm going to take advantage of this and fight make them fight both the dead and me.
Yeah. That makes sense, yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
Because so I've always thought that Jaime would kill Cersei, at least in the book. But they never brought up that prophecy in the show, so, like, it's not necessary to follow through with it.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm wondering, like, how would Jaime survive the next episode? Like, how would Daenerys let him live when he's the one who killed her dad? And also threw Bran out the window, but that's not really as important because Bran is alive. So, like, unless the Battle of Winterfell happening is what saves him, you know? Like, oh, we can't do this right now because the dead are coming. Or is it, like, will this be the test of Daenerys, like, you know, if she lets Jaime live, then she's not a crazy power mad lady? I don't know. Yeah. You know?
She isn't her father.
Yeah. So.
I mean, maybe he has to tell his story the way he did to Bran.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he finally has to reveal what really happened, I guess.
Yeah.
But who, well, and then what? Bran's gonna have to back him up and be like, no, that's really how it happened?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, Bran will be like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was an interesting choice to end just completely on Jaime being like, oh shit, I'm fucked.
Yeah. That was so funny.
Because I was like, wow, that's true. That's a big moment.
And it birthed many memes as well.
Yeah, I bet. But they did release some photos of the second episode. I know they already, you know, obviously we got the trailer, but they did release some photos, and there is a picture of Jaime, you know, standing where Peter Baelish stood in front of everybody.
Yep. Jaime on trial.
He is obviously being brought in front of everybody, and they're going to interrogate him. So, yeah, it could be that maybe they're in the middle of that, and then that's when the Night King strikes.
Yeah. Saving Jaime's butt.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't think about that that way. But it would be interesting, and it would be poetic if, you know, because Cersei is basically becoming the Mad Queen.
Yeah.
If he does have to put her down.
Yeah.
That's a horrible way to say it. Sorry.
That is a horrible way, but, you know, yeah, that is, I do want to see him be the one to end her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'm like, I feel like watching the episode was really stressful because now I'm like, we have so little time and so much has to happen.
That's true. That's true. There's only 5 episodes left, right?
Yes.
crazy.
And as much as we thought they were all going to be an hour and a half long, right? Like, the first one was only an hour.
Yep. And it wasn't even an hour. It was an hour including the credits and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, which, what did you think of the new credits, by the way?
I like them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it brings to mind, you know, it is a much smaller world. We don't need to know where all these other
exactly.
places are because they don't matter in the whole scheme of things anymore. Yep.
We've cut things down, for sure. Now I'm just thinking about all the characters. Like, there's so many characters that I need to live. This is so sad.
I know. my biggest fear really is the, like, not even just them dying, but them dying in the Battle of Winterfell and then having to see them as whites. Or, I mean, as
whites. Oh, that'll be so sad, yeah. I don't like that.
I know. I don't want to see them having to fight people that they love.
Yeah.
That are already gone.
But that's definitely going to happen at least once.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
But who? It's like, who do we see in that position? Yeah. I can think of lots of pairings where it would be, like, sad to see that person fighting that other person, but you're like, I don't want to see that person die.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And it's hard to believe that some of them would happen, just because, like, I'm thinking of things like Brienne and Jaime. Well, at some point they have to have some kind of, I don't know what they're going to do with them, if they're going to put them together or not, but, like, that would be, I guess you could do Pod and Brienne?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not, people won't care as much about Pod. Oh, Paul Podrick.
Poor Podrick, yeah. But Brienne would care, yeah, and that would be sad for Brienne.
Yeah.
Sad, though.
Yeah, I'm like, too many of the characters I think need to live, like, longer into the series, so I'm like, who else would be? Somebody, not, all I can think now is then, like, either Missandei or Grey Worm, but I'm like, no, they need to survive and everybody else die.
Hmm.
They have to fight Daenerys, there you go, she becomes a white.
Yeah.
Right. yeah, I don't know. I like I said, I'm just mostly trying to stay detached, I guess.
You're making the right choice.
Yeah. Which, I mean, only works so well, because, like, I just watched the entire series again recently, and, like, even Viserion dying upset me, so obviously I can say that I care, but, or I don't care, but I do care. Am I going to attach the dragon when I figure all the dragons are going to die by the end of it?
Sad.
Yeah. Anyway.
Hmm?
Is that all we have to say for now?
Yeah, I think yeah. And then, you know, in 2 days, we'll have more to say all over again.
I know. I'm pretty sure we'll be having a GOT recap every single episode.
As we should.
And then we're going to have to have one at the very end where it's just, like, only breaking down the entire theory.
Right.
I just hope it's satisfying.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we're going to end then on an interview I did back at the TCAs in February, I guess that was.
Oh, wow.
I can't even, I'm so hard to keep track of where I am now. It's for a new series, at least new to the U.S., already aired in the U.K., on BBC Three, I think it was. It's called There She Goes, and it stars Jessica Hines and who used to be Jessica Stevenson in Space, which we need to talk about at some point because we keep saying we're going to do it. We haven't done it yet. Anyway, and David Tennant. And it's based on the true story of creator Sean Pye and his wife and their experience raising a daughter who, she's not autistic. She has severe learning severe learning disability. I don't think they really, like, completely know yet what it is,
mm-hmm.
or it's so rare that it's not something that I know what it's called.
Oh, wow.
And she's, yeah, it's so, it basically, it's kind of, it's funny because it's comical, but it's also obviously sad watching, but it's just about, like, this family and,
yeah.
you know, it is their life.
Mm-hmm.
And how they deal with, and it's not PC, because in the reality, in a lot of ways, it wouldn't be, right? Because
right.
you're living the life, and you've got to do whatever, you know, whatever you can to, you know.
Yeah.
So the David Tennant's character is always, he's doing, he's not the best father half the time, Because it also goes between, like, when she's first born and they know something's wrong, but everybody's telling them, no, it's nothing's wrong.
Right.
But they can tell there's something wrong because they've already had a son, mm-hmm. and they can see the developmental differences. And also, I think she's 10 in the later part of the series.
Oh, okay.
So it flashes back and forth between the two. And David Tennant's character still doesn't know what the correct term is.
Oh my gosh.
All the time to describe his daughter. So he's constantly getting it wrong.
Oh my god.
Anyway, so yeah, the interview, the first voice you will hear is Sean Pye, or the first male voice, but after mine. The first male voice you'll hear is Sean Pye, who is the writer and creator, and it is based on his real life with his daughter and family. And, the other voices are Clelia Mountford, who is a producer on the series, and Shane Allen, who was the BBC comedy commissioner for the series, for BBC Three. So, enjoy my interview.
I kind of want to know why this was an important story for you to tell, because it is about your family.
As a writer, you're constantly trying to think of where am I going to get an idea from? Where am I going to get a script from? And you pitch things the whole time. And it suddenly occurred to me and Sarah one day that we had the most amazing character possible living in our house, Joe. And once we'd had conversations about whether we should do it, if we could do it, it became, without question, the most important thing I've ever done, and it's because it's such a personal story, but also I felt a great deal of responsibility that, can I swear on your podcast?
Yes.
I felt a lot of pressure, and I think Clelia will agree with me, I think Shane will agree with me, we couldn't fuck this up. We just couldn't. If we fuck this up, then we would regret it for more than other shows that we've worked on. You know, you take chances, you take risks, it doesn't come off, it's fine, but if we fuck this up, it would be bad. And I don't think we have, but in a way, I've never felt the same amount of pressure on anything I've ever done, and I'm just pleased that it's turned out the way it has, and it's met with the reception it has, really, which is huge. Huge credit to Clelia and Shane and Alex and at the BBC, but yeah, I think it was important because it was personal, but I think as we were making the show, and actually subsequent, I've now come to realise it seems to be important to a lot of other people as well, with children or siblings in a similar situation who have been in touch to say, thank God I'm seeing my life on screen, thank God I'm not alone, thank God, I just thought we were the only people who were going through this, but to see, and that to me, on the last day of filming, we put a message on the call sheet just to say thank the cast and crew, who are all, without a single exception, amazing. And we said, basically, we hope we haven't fucked this up. We hope we've done the story justice. And just people went to this.
There's a lot of talk right now about representation, obviously, for people of color. But there's also discussion about the importance of showing the broad range of just life in general. I know a few years ago with things like Glee, people talked about that, showing gay couples, the importance of that, because it normalizes it to people who think they don't see that in everyday life. So was that part of the thought in maybe like commissioning the series? And just kind of talk about that.
I mean, it's that thing where you're trying to tell stories that haven't been told before, so trying to create inclusion, trying to find somebody who, everything that's rooted and real seems to connect with people. So that was really important for this. It's Sean's story, and I'm interested in comedy's ability to take on challenging or awkward or taboo topics, and where those fault lines between comedy and drama are. And this show has all of that, you know, it's funny, heartbreaking, bittersweet, but it's real, and it had to be Sean's story. Sean's very clear to go, this isn't trying to tell every disabled story, very much just his experience. So it's all rooted in Sean's life, and that's why I think it's connected with a lot of people. And we didn't want it just to be, it's a disability story for families who, you know, who have direct experience of that. It had to work as a piece for everyone. Everyone, you know, that parenting experience, I think a lot of mums go through that isolation and desolation. So it has all of those elements as well.
It's quite universal. It's a very specific story. People can always take something from it and relate to it in terms of being overwhelmed by...
I think Jessica, in particular, drew on her own experiences of parenthood to inform her character. So obviously she was playing a version of my wife in that specific story, but she, talking to her on set, and she was bringing a lot of her own experiences. I mean, her performance is extraordinary, I think. But yes, she, yeah, there were universal aspects to those feelings of inadequacy, I suppose. And isolation.
Yeah, certainly in the earlier timeline, because obviously the later is slightly different, their experience, but it's that not knowing what you're doing, whether things are right or wrong, because you don't go to an expert until a little bit later.
It's a little bit down the line, but certainly in the episodes that we've given out now, yeah, it's very much that feeling of her against the world, basically. You know, in the scene at the end where David's character basically lets her know that she's not alone against the world. You know. But no, she was, Jessica was incredible. She was, she would get very emotional on set. Which,
I can imagine.
So would you.
Yeah, I had to leave. That scene at the end of episode one where they're in the kitchen, we filmed it on David first, and it was like hard. And then they turned around to film on Jeff. I said, I'm not watching this.
And then the other thing that was at the outset was, Sean's talked about this, about the worthiness or sentimentality, and we've seen it in a lot of films, the sort of cliches about, you know, these superhuman parents who deal with this. And it's really creating the anti-hero around that. It's creating the real experience that isn't all... triumph
and
dark humour to it, you know.
The last thing I wanted to do, I think I said it out there or hinted at it, was I would hate to produce a programme that someone living through a similar period would watch and it would make them feel inadequate. It would make them feel, oh my God, I'm look at this couple on screen who are laughing and joking, and you know, they have a few hiccups along the road, but you know, that's how I should be bringing up or dealing with this situation. I didn't want to do that at all. I wanted to say, you know, it's all right to feel terrible, it's all right to say terrible things, it's all right to rage against the world, you know, it's all right to sit there and think, why the fuck has this happened to us? What have we done to deserve this? That's normal. So we wanted to put all of that in, and that sort of that darker side and that sort of darker humour in, just not for any other reason than it was real. Just so anyone, as I say, anyone who was watching wouldn't sit there and think, oh great, another idealised version of parenthood.
How hard was it finding the tone? Because obviously it is a dramatic situation, but at the same time it is just life. And you have to have some levity, I would assume, just to get, I mean, any life to get through day to day.
The tone of the show, I think the watchword that me and Sarah, my wife, had was that as long as it felt real, that's fine. And if that took us in a direction that wasn't funny, that's fine. And if it took us in a direction that was funny, that's fine as well. But if we found that we were writing a story and it was like, well, that didn't really happen, or we just put this in to get a laugh, then it came out. And, you know, we took out, there was some funny stuff in various versions that we reined back, so it was like we're just chasing the laugh there. So by hanging on to that rule, it hopefully that transmits into the viewer watching that sense of authenticity. But certainly for us and for Clelia and the whole team who were making it, the sort of guideline was, well, does this seem real to you? If it's real to you, then it's fine for us. And the fact is that a lot of Joe, bringing up Joe, and you know, a lot of it is funny. you know. So as long as we just put that on screen, that's yeah. fine.
Because being a comedy producer, a comedy writer, it would have been very easy to look at something and say, right, that needs a bit of a gag here, or a bit of a more of a punch to an end of the scene. But it would have compromised exactly what we were trying to do. And we found the humour in it in a slightly different way. It might have been in a situation and the way Rosie's reacting to something, and it's the frustration of the father and how he's saying he's making dinner, but actually he's trying to avoid the whole situation. So rather than funny music stinger, or, you know.
I think the tones really helped as well by their timeline. The discovering the pregnancy, that being a very challenging, difficult situation, and then we see the kind of coping and acceptance. So you get to see the kind of fact that they have become, they've been tested as a family, but then there's redemption in that move. And I think tonally, that comes across. You know, you get a really hard-hitting piece in the kitchen piece about let me grieve for the child that I didn't have, and the stuff that's very, very difficult, and then you get to see others' joy and love in that family as well. And I think that earns you the right to be funny.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think earning the right, yeah, I'm conscious that we felt that we had to justify. It was different to other programs that we've worked on, because come back to the charity screening, I knew who's going to be watching this program, and if we had not been faithful to the story, then quite rightly those people could have said, you're bullshit, and also you've wasted an opportunity. This was our chance to have these stories told, and you screwed it up. So that was at the forefront of what we were doing a lot, that we just couldn't let those people down.
No, I think you guys did a great job, definitely. So one of the things that's kind of refreshing, and it's just refreshing in kind of British television anyway, is the honesty. I feel like a lot of American television puts on a front. And especially with a series like this, it would be so easy to shy away from the darker parts of it. And you include a very British humor, that there are things that are said that would not be considered PC, and you actually have the neighbor reacting to that. How important was that? And because I would assume it's just part of your life. You've got to...
It's part of life. The language thing is very, very interesting, because it's absolutely at the centre of what we were just saying about as long as it was real. Mm-hmm. So I wrote the script and showed it to Sarah, for co-authorship. And Sarah's a doctor. It's not in the programme, but she's quite a high-ranking neuropsychologist. So she works in the sort of whole field anyway, and she said these aren't the terms. You can't say mentally handicapped, you can't say retarded, you can't say these aren't the terms that you use. You're going to get pushback for this. People are going to... And my response to her was, that's A, interesting, but these are the terms that I use. Over the period of time that the story is taking place, this is what I said, because I didn't know what the words were. So I said, don't you think it would be a good idea to put this conversation in the show? That's real. This is a real conversation we're having. So the fact that the neighbour picks him up on his terminology is basically us referencing that. And I thought it was important, because a lot of people have been in touch with me who brought this up exactly, and they sort of make a joke of it themselves. A lot of them, there's a couple I've had, emails I've had from strangers who start by saying, my son is mentally retarded, sorry, mentally handicapped, sorry, learning disabled, sorry. And they reference the joke. It was like, that was very important to me, that other people in that situation, we weren't overreaching ourselves. It's an observation that is hitting home with a lot of people who don't really care what their child is referred to as long as it's not meant maliciously. They just rather people just treat them with kindness. But yeah, that was the whole language thing. I think it possibly is a British thing as well. I don't know how those conversations would have gone with an American network. Luckily, I was working with the BBC, who found it funny and let's do it.
We have found out, it's clearly a mixed motherland, that parenting experience with your flea bag, that thing where it's, there's darkness, there's some difficult subject matter, but if you make characters rounded and real, you earn the right to tell those stories with humour.
Can you talk a little...
Sorry, just to jump in, we have time for
one more question. Okay. Obviously, in a situation like this, casting is incredibly important, because if you get one wrong character, I mean, I can't imagine anyone but David Tennant really honestly playing that role, because you've got to like him, but at the same... even though you're...
And they look like
you kind of...
I love the fact you noticed that David's grown a beard, because I've grown a beard.
Yeah, yes, he's copying you.
Single one.
David, sorry, you're pretty... Sorry.
Well, just, can you talk about the casting in general? I mean, I would assume every single role. Obviously, you would focus on Rosie being so important, but every single role is so key.
We had David in mind very early on, and luckily he came on board and has been so supportive from day
when
one.
When you brought me the idea, you said, I want David Tennant to play me.
I want David Tennant to play me. If not him, then, you know, I'll accept John Hamm in a pinch. But, so he came on board, and then Jess came on board later, just because, you know, you were going through the normal casting process. I think Jess's performance is... I think David's amazing, obviously.
Yeah.
But Jess is... I've run out of superlatives to describe the warmth.
She's known for comedy
yes.
in the UK, and we haven't really seen her do this within a comedy programme. I think she's done films as well. This felt quite new.
But it wasn't a risk, I don't think, but when her name came up, the people were saying, can she do the drama bits? Can she do the drama? Can she do the drama bits? Yeah, she can. So she was incredible. I mean, Miley, as Clelia said out there, we had a very, very long casting process. And eventually it came down to, I mean, everyone was just in agreement. It was just, everyone just said,
there's a cheekiness, wasn't there?
There's a cheekiness. And what she has, which I hope she doesn't develop the older she gets, is just an honesty about what she was doing. We saw a lot of very, very good young actors, really, really, it was quite eye-opening how strong a lot of them were, but a lot of them, you could sort of see the acting, and for Rosie, obviously it's a prerequisite that it's very instinctive what she's doing. It's not, there isn't a thought process behind, she's not thinking, react, and Miley, my God, she was amazing, wasn't she? And Eden, we shouldn't forget Eden, who plays Ben, is a very, very good year. I can't think of a cast member who we weren't overjoyed with.
Yeah.
I mean, we got Nigel Planer, who's obviously a legend,
legend
in British comedy. So, Philip Jackson, who's quite an iconic actor back home. They were all great, and I mean, we had to make the decision early on that we weren't going to go with a young actor with learning disability, because we couldn't. But once that decision was taken, I mean, it was a no-brainer, really.
Yeah, she was incredible.
Yeah.
Well, the greatest compliment I can give you is that I was watching it with my husband, and both of us were like, but we want to keep going. Where's the rest? And so we only got the two episodes. So we're going to be watching it as soon as possible.
No, it's always good when I speak to people and say, I saw your show the other night, and me and my husband were both crying at the end.
Yes.
Yes. Gotcha. But thank you. That's very kind.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. I believe that's it. So, okay. Thank you for joining us for another Pop a la Carte. As always, you can find more news, reviews, and interviews on withanaccent.com, and you can follow us at withanaccent on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and at withanaccentTV on YouTube. And the podcast is Pop a la Carte Pod on Twitter and Facebook. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye.